Hi everyone, welcome to the Cover Mindset podcast from McGinley Coaching. I'm your host and founder, Lorna McGinley. Today we're joined by Steve J. How are you, Steve?
Very well, thanks.
Can you just tell the listeners a background about yourself and your kind of coaching philosophy and the kind of coaching journey you've been on?
Yeah, of course. I've been fortunate enough to be coaching for 16 years. I've been across all sort of variety of different environments. Started out in grassroots football in my local hometown, actually, for the team that I played for, just another age group within that club setup, and then sort of got the bug from there and decided to go down a route of education for my university degree in sports coaching. Spent 3 years in Cardiff. Again, just trying to gather as much information as possible. I was very fortunate to be able to gather some of my coach qualifications along the way there. So I got my B license the year after I finished university. And then, obviously, lots of different coaching roles. Was doing development centres in and around Cardiff. I came back and I started to work at multiple different clubs, doing a lot of their development centres, Bristol Rovers, Hereford United, before they folded and became Hereford FC. And then was fortunate enough to apply and be successful for getting a sort of an operations role at Fulham FC Foundation, so within the community, and that's what led me to move down to this part of the world. And then sort of 10 and a half years later, with lots of different experiences, running schools programs, development centres still, Saturday morning provision, lots of participation-based events and sessions, as well as combining that with roles at AFC Wimbledon in the academy there, with, again, a variety of age groups, 10s and 14s, back to 10s, and then moving across to Fulham's academy, working with the pre-academy with the 8s, and then, again, little bits of work with various age groups. I then had the opportunity, I guess, to move into women's football, which sort of coincided with a changing role at the foundation as well, which I started to run like college programs and things. So, yeah, I've been on this sort of journey that sort of spanned across all the age groups, all of the different environments, and I'm now fortunate enough to be working full-time in women's first team football.
Yeah. Okay, we'll talk about that kind of later on, because it's that's kind of the crux of the kind of conversation. But a lot of coaches start off working with kind of younger children, and it's sometimes really daunting, but it's also so exciting too, because you get to make lots of mistakes, you know, but you also learn that sometimes it's maybe the best thing or the worst thing, because it just depends on the environment. What kind of skills have you learned working with the younger children, and see when you're obviously making mistakes and learning kind of new ideas, did you kind of speak to different mentors to help you become that a little bit better, you know, like different themes or different ideas to maybe challenge yourself to get to that kind of next level of not coaching but developing yourself to become that a little bit better?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the thing around working with younger age groups is that you maybe don't feel as much pressure to have to get everything right yourself, because you know that they're very much in their early learning stages themselves. So the opportunity to explore on both sides is probably a little bit more available from a coaching and a playing perspective. I think the big thing for me for working with younger age groups is just energy. Like, it sounds so cliche, like the tactical side and technical to even some degree is really irrelevant. We just want to be able to provide energy to the younger age groups. And I'm talking about sort of 6, 7, 8s up to maybe 10s. You start to provide that energy, they get infected by the game like we all did when we started playing or getting involved, and then the rest is easier because they're already invested in the game, they're already invested in wanting to get better because they love playing. But yeah, I think mentors, I probably didn't see the full value of having mentors or people that I could ask and speak to coaching about more regularly until I moved to Fulham. Sort of in my role at the foundation, there's a very small collection of individuals that have gone on to also work in the main club here at Fulham, but also other environments and men's teams in the professional game academies across the sort of south. And I feel very fortunate that I was able to go into the foundation at a time where there was a number of those coaches and staff there, because it meant that we had different conversations than maybe I've been used to before. the other part to that, I think, is that I also had the opportunity to have those conversations after a period of starting out in coaching. So I wasn't coming in fresh with ideas that were about, I don't know, the specifics of a particular practice that we've been delivering, but actually talking about principles and more broader themes that then, I guess, underpinned what I started to do more broadly and what I tried to do more and more in weeks of coaching and delivery rather than the very specific individual practices, which I thought was really beneficial for me as well.
Yeah, because we talk about, you obviously worked with boys and girls, and it's interesting because it's you get to that energy. Does it matter if it's boys, girls, you know, people with disabilities, or it's always that kind of, and I think it was Michael Beale, he said that your energy introduces you. You know, if you've got a really positive energy, even if it's a 1v1 session, it's come on, you go out. Do you think, obviously you're working the kind of women's game in the moment, but you've worked in the kind of boys too. Do you think having that, you say the energy, but also just having that kind of experience working with boys and girls has actually made you a more rounded coach, so you can learn how the different kind of physiology works, but also working with you know, different parents who might have expectations of boys and girls, you know, and it must be something that you're probably pretty proud of, you know, working in at the top end of the game, but also working with the young children that maybe 10 years ago, that you're the one who developed that young boy or that young girl.
I think I was very fortunate, again, to talk about my time at the foundation, that I was able to work with a variety of groups. You mentioned disability groups there. Through my time, I was able to go and, whether that was initially observe and then maybe take a couple of sessions and then come back out of the environment in all of our aspects. So we've got social inclusion projects through the Premier League that we used to run in some really deprived areas of South West London and South London, which could typically be some of the trickiest. I was very fortunate to be able to work with some young people in that environment. I've been very fortunate to work with adults who have not been as sort of fortunate as us and have some very different needs to maybe what you'd expect from a typical football session. And yeah, been able to, obviously, like we've talked about, work with boys in an academy environment, work with boys in the development centre environment, and girls in both environments too. And I think all of those collectively have been able to allow me to have a lot more broader view of where I think or how I think I should interact with different groups and different people to help them get the best out of them. And yeah, I feel proud of some of the young people that I've had the opportunity to engage with that are now ones at Man City and doing really well in their academy system. A couple have played a number of games in League One and League Two for Wimbledon, but you also remember that you're just such a small part of their journey and such a small part of their engagement with the game. So I feel privileged to have been able to work with those individuals. Appreciate that there's so many other people that have also contributed to that too. So it is a good feeling, but also, yeah, like you say, you recognise there's a lot more goes into it than just what I added.
Yeah, because interesting, because you talk about, you know, academy football, you know, and every coach likes to say, I've worked in an academy and I get this and that, and it's great, but sometimes it's, if you don't work in an academy, you go a different, slightly different route. You know, you could be learning new ideas. But you mentioned, obviously, you're kind of working at Fulham, you know, the kind of first team. But you experience working in kind of development centres. Do you think having working in an academy is kind of helped you? But also, even working at an RTC, it's also good having that, you know, I say twin role, if that kind of makes sense in a way, because the, you've got that kind of working with the boys' academy, 14, 16, but also the girls, 10s and, you know, 8s, 10s. Do you think it's good having that variety of, you know, learning, you know, from the more, don't want to say pressure, but 14s and 16s is slightly a bit more pressure to get a professional contract, but then you've got the younger ones too, and it can be pressure from parents because of expectations. How do you try and kind of deal with that kind of expectation when you have to maybe fulfill a need that's not exactly, you know, you can't really get there because it might not be accessible or might not be achievable?
Yeah, it's tricky. I think everybody has a dream. I mean, even the college program that I used to run, like, there were some similar expectations from the athletes that they would earn professional contracts by the time that they finished the program, when actually they're not even in a professional environment in the first instance. And yeah, you talk about sort of later stages of academy age groups and football, and sometimes the expectation that the players are hopeful of, but also the parents have, and the parents obviously don't see as much necessarily as the players. I think the players can sometimes feel it. They know if they're not doing as well, they know if they're struggling, they'll strive to ask for some bits of feedback and help in those environments and those moments. But I think parents can be the most tricky ones because they're not engaged in it day to day. They're not engaged to it with you on a week to week basis. So when you're starting to provide feedback, they recognise what that might lead to longer term, and they can get quite defensive about that. So I think communicating as much as possible is always the best route, and formal meetings and informal meetings that enable the person to feel like they've had a whole wrap around from all different areas and support from different support structures gives them the best chance to either succeed with the things that you're asking them to succeed with, or at least recognise that there's a lot of work that they need to do, and therefore they might not be able to achieve those standards they're striving for themselves.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about standards and, you know, striving. You obviously work at Fulham, a top club, you know, but you've always had different roles, you know, different ideas on, you know, basically different hats, as they always say. But what have you learned that sometimes you have to do the 10-hour day, the 14-hour day, and then sometimes it goes wrong, or sometimes you've only got a very similar, like they say, training. You know, you have to maybe work with a group that's maybe got only six players because of X, you know, maybe there's weather or there's things that happened. But also, what have you kind of, what's the highlight been so far in your role at Fulham? You know, because you said you've had many roles, but there's probably a couple that you probably excite. But then from that, there's probably things that you've had to deal with, you know, like that are kind of dealing with kind of players that are kind of unhappy, you know. Like, I'm just wondering how you kind of balance the good from the bad, you know, because it is probably the hardest question in football sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I think actually from a coaching perspective, like the progression that we've shown as an individual team, which I appreciate is difficult for those who've not seen us from 5 years ago to now, but I think the thing that I probably find most pride in is the progression that we've made, one as from a footballing perspective, but I also have a role within my full-time position at the moment to sort of help with the strategic growth of the group as well, and what things are we investing in that's going to support the group over the long term. And if we were to look at what our programme looked like 5 years ago, in terms of just the very basic nuts and bolts of where we trained, how often we trained, what kit the players had available to them, what staff they had available to them, to now, the programme has grown immensely, and we're very fortunate we've got a very supportive football club behind us. But the thing that I'm probably most proud of is being able to take the group and take the club through that transition to where we are at the moment, and then being able to meet all the individuals along the way, the players along the way that have then added to the journey that we're all on, the different challenges that each of them posed at different levels. And that's not even just talking about football, that's character stuff, personality stuff, value stuff, that just give you the opportunity to learn and grow on each step of the journey. And yeah, I think that's probably been the thing that at the moment where I look back and I go, we've done such a great job so far. I don't think that ever stops, but I think we've done a great job so far in the last 5 years to get to where we are now. And now, one of the things for us and one of the things for the group is actually best not worry too much about all the stuff that you get on the outside of football. That's the stuff that's going to be there now as a constant. We've worked so hard to make sure that's there. We've now got to make sure our job on the pitch is to go and execute and to go and fulfil our the objectives that we have on the pitch, to go and win football matches or perform in a certain way or to try and get promoted, etc.
Yeah, because I was listening to a podcast with Serena Wiegman. She was in a high performance podcast, and a lot of the it was incredible. I'd recommend, you know, another podcast, not on my own, but she talked about the biggest thing is sometimes the failure, you know, like if you fail at training or you fail something, and it's how you adapt that failure to make it a success, you know. From the she would have a player sent off, or she would deal with different scenarios. And I know that in the kind of the football world, there's so many different scenarios now. Like you've got penalties that might not be penalties, red cards that not red cards, you know, players injured that are, you know, it could be 2 weeks, but actually it could be 6 weeks. The kind of role you're in, you know, as the first team coach, you've obviously had to deal with different scenarios. Is that something that you try and implement to the players so therefore they can control the controllables, but when it comes to uncontrollable things, you don't react, because obviously you need to use a lot of emotional intelligence in the game now, because there's such an emotional game, but also the prize, you know, of winning a 3 points potentially could be a promotion or relegation. Is that something you're trying to implement in your training, but also working even with staff members to improve them?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think it's as formal as uneasily pinpointable as to like what we do exactly to be able to manage that. I think that a lot of it comes down to my own previous experience. We work with the group on a very minimal basis. We see them two training sessions a week at the moment in our current environment, and obviously a match day. All the players are in mostly full-time work or full-time education, so the contact time that we have to be able to manage all those things is quite tricky. But certainly I'd say how we've grown to understand that not everything's always going to go our way, and how we can respond to that and use that to some extent to support us. I mean, this season, for whatever reason, we've decided that going 1-0 down helps us get better and win the game, and that's not something as a staff member or as a head coach you certainly want to instill in the group is okay as a standard, because there's some of those games where you go 1-0 down, you're not going to be able to come back because of the quality of the team you're playing against. But we have definitely grown, I think, across the time that we've been working together, to know that it's okay if something goes wrong. Like, we are working with players generally across all levels that make mistakes, like staff make mistakes. I think the biggest thing for me links to all the experiences I've had before. I think a lot of people want to strive to get to a first team coaching position as quickly as they possibly can, but and even by quickly they mean like a season. But actually the work that I've been able to do up to this point has prepared me as well as possible to manage some of those things. Like, as an example, we recently played at the stadium at the Cottage and played against Arsenal's under 21s, and if I rewind 6 years ago or 5 years back, I was taking charge of a cup quarter final for the college team against Burnley, and the game went to penalties. And before the time that the game went to penalties, we'd made a decision that if it was getting close to penalties, we'd change the goalkeeper. The goalkeeper we had in was great for on-pitch stuff for the 90 minutes. The goalkeeper that I had on the bench at the time for the college programme was excellent at shot stopping and penalties. We'd worked on that all week, and I made that decision in that environment, knowing that if it had gone wrong, I'd have to manage the group and the players around it, but the spotlight wouldn't have been on us as much as if it would have been a couple of weeks ago, like it was at Craven Cottage. And thankfully for me at that point, the decision paid off. We won the penalty shootout, got into the semi-finals, and there was obviously a big buzz around that. And it gave me the opportunity, I think those environments gave me the opportunity to put myself in other positions to make those mistakes or see what those different scenarios would be if I got it wrong or if I got it right. And we were again fortunate to be, well, we were in a position a couple of weeks ago where the game was getting closer to penalties. Now, the sort of scenario centres slightly differently in that the goalkeepers actually both arguably are good at penalties. We hadn't actually worked on them in the week. So again, a failure from my part in the week to make sure we were prepared for the game as we could be. But one of the goalkeepers who was on the bench, or the goalkeeper that was on the bench, had played in a penalty shootout a couple of weeks ago, and we got through and we won, and she saved 3 penalties. And so we made that decision based on a decision I made 5 years ago more than anything else. I don't think I'd have been able to do that if I hadn't had that backing from 5 years ago to show to me that it's okay and it can pay off. And again, got very lucky in the game a couple of weeks ago, and she had to save a penalty. Ellie had to save a penalty in the 89th minute in game, as opposed to just waiting for the shootout. So thankfully she got that one, and then saves 3 penalties in the penalty shootout, and then win the game. And just to reinforce, I think I wouldn't be able to make those decisions without all the failures, all the opportunities for failure. It's not even about failing, but just the opportunities for failure in all my previous experiences. Because I think coaches are very quick to want to be at the very top level of what they see coaching to be, which can often be a first team environment, without taking the time to go through some of those struggles that can and take just time to go through rather than sort of opportunity.
Yeah, I agree. Because you look at, you try and work out, like, what is a head coach? But then everyone looks at, like, the top end and said, well, what's wrong with being the best under-12s coach? Under-14s, you know, learning these traits, because you could be a first-team head coach and you could not really like it because of the pressure, but you could like working with... I know one of the coaches at Arsenal, Men, he's, I think he takes the, like, under-9s or under-10s because he loves doing that. But he said he went up to the first team or that kind of... he said he didn't like it because it was too much pressure. It was, like, 4 nights a week, couldn't deal with the family, had a full-time job, and it was, like, that... But again, that's just different scenarios. But again, it's all about what... It's not about what you want. It's about what your skill set is. And sometimes people... You can improve your skill set every day, you know, by doing something new or trying to develop. But sometimes you just have to sometimes stay in your lane and then move just out of maybe lane two and then back to lane one. So you're kind of going back into that kind of way of thinking. But no, that reminds me of... I love set pieces, which we'll talk about in a second. But sometimes when I coach, I like to play three up front, just to kind of create the for them to take maybe a 3v3 or a 4v3. But the reason why is, see, if I've got a defence that's quite tall and quite strong, I just get the goalie to take the ball, and then it's a counter attack. But it worked maybe once out of 10 times. But the one time it did work, it won the game. And it's like that trust and connection. And that's the one thing you said about the goalkeepers. You know, they're in the women's game, and it's slightly more in there. The connection between the coach and the players is slightly more emotional, slightly more, you know, trust. Because if you get something right, they're more likely to do something and help themselves, you know, like through video, through that. Obviously, working with part-time players, you need to develop that kind of trust more. But how do you try and manage that? What does a week look like for you? I know you train twice a week, but how does the kind of sessions look like? Obviously, it's been general because I'm not looking for specific, but just more ideas, because a lot of coaches want to go first team level, but sometimes they go part-time to go full-time. So that's a long-winded question.
Yeah. Well, I think the week isn't just the two sessions, obviously.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot more that goes into the sort of week than just that. And again, my role being full-time, even though we work in a part-time environment, helps obviously manage that a lot more. So the conversations that we have with players, with staff throughout the week are geared towards helping get us ready for training on a Tuesday and a Thursday. I think generally obviously it all depends on lots of different factors what we do in training, but we try and stick to a very similar format for continuity, and so we know what returns we're getting physically as well. Obviously our physical development coach will have an input as to what he'd like to see from the session himself, and then obviously if it's not going to hit what he needs threshold wise then he'll try and condition the players in some extra running or in some extra activities that get them to where he needs them to get to. So there's lots that factor into what a week looks like for us. At the moment, and this is actually up for review at the moment with the playing group, and we're having that discussion, we'll start in that discussion in the course of the next few weeks, but at the moment, if we start from before a match day, we go through, select the team on a Friday, share with them the squad, and we'll share with them the match objectives in preparation for Sunday, so players have got time to digest all of that information, and they know exactly what to expect when they get to us on Sunday. And at the moment, what we suggest is that if players need support between Friday and Sunday, anything related to in-game, then we're more than welcome to be available for that. Anything related to sort of discussions around team selection at the moment, we wait until Monday to have that conversation when the emotion of everything related to a match day is different. We actually took that from Emma Hayes a few years ago, and have been using that for a couple of years now. But we are under review for that, because I think as you change playing groups and as you change individuals, some things meet different players' needs at different times. So anyway, if we start at that point, we obviously then get through the game, manage the game as appropriate as we can, and then we get to Monday, and that's the opportunity for players to discuss team selection challenges, things they want to work on, feedback around making sure that they can give themselves the best chance to be selected for the week after, which then can inform a little bit of some of our training ideas around how we interact with individuals to make sure we support them on the feedback we give them. Generally, across the staff group, we got obviously all our different areas and different sections of the training sessions that we'll sort of lead on. So we always start with a group activation and then group gym, just because of the environment and the constraints we have based on us, we go gym first. Then we will typically, because we have half a pitch to start with for the first 20 minutes of the training session after the gym, we'll do some very small possession-based practice, something that will get lots of touches on the ball, something that will enable the players to sort of feel connected again with the game and the ball and all the rest of it after recovering from Sunday. The goalkeepers will go up and do their session, and then we'll come back together after that first 20 minutes and maybe have a 30 to 40 minute full group game of some sort that will lead into objectives linked to the following week.
Yeah,
a lot of the work that we will do is based on the game model. In fact, all of the work that we do is based on the game model. So everything we talk about in every practice will have some aspect and link back to what we want them to look like on a Sunday.
Yeah, it's interesting because the game model, a lot of people, like 5 years ago, it was philosophy, then it was methodology. It's different ways of just talking, you know what I mean, like communication. But the biggest thing I see now is you've seen a lot of is it male and female staff, and it's great having that kind of blend because your skill set is probably high, but then you've got maybe, do you have a female staff and you're kind of part of your staff? But that knowledge of, I was listening to Raymond Verheyen and he talked about it with Emma Hayes, you know, like she talks about what's in the menstrual cycle and the kind of nutrition. Is that something, obviously, if you're working in the women's game, you need to have a knowledge of, but is it good having maybe male and female talking to the players so there is a kind of different connection? Because obviously there's different players will react off of different coaches, i.e. like you might be, I'm not saying you're shouty, but you could be the shout coach and then you've got the calm coach, and then flip it around, it could be someone else. Is it good having that variety of different male and female staff members so the players can go and speak to individuals that might just need a little bit of support that they're maybe lacking, or sorry, not lacking, but need a little bit more in the area they're in?
I think it's really important that you have a variety. It's not even just about whether it's male or female, but I think it's just a variety of different people, personalities. So my assistant coach, Rach, is female. I've got two physios who are both female. Last season, our analyst was also female, but has now actually moved into a playing role. And I think what you get by having different people is you get diversity in your staff team, and you get people asking different questions and posing different questions and different challenges, which again is healthy for the group because the conversation isn't then just the same, oh yeah, this person, we all agree that this person is this good or this not, or not this good, when actually then when you've got different people in that environment discussing those individuals, you're just getting a diverse view and not always just considering the same things over and over again. So it's not necessarily even maybe about gender, but just about personality, making sure we have different personalities within our staff team. When we talk about things, I obviously work with a female group, talk things about things around the menstrual cycle and female physiology, etc., then of course I think there's definitely sort of scope that having female staff helps with those conversations, but that doesn't mean that male staff can't. Like for me, for example, I've been working really hard over the course of the last 3 years, 4 years, to educate myself on the menstrual cycle in particular, and I'll let the players know that I've educated myself as much as possible, and I'll know as much as I can at the moment without obviously experiencing it. And I think in some cases that's also helped players become a little bit more comfortable talking to me about it separately and individually. We've also now got support through an app that, similar to how Chelsea actually set theirs up, to allow players to track and monitor their own cycles, because, again, education for... we know for young people, for young women, for girls, it can be or has been pretty limited around certain areas like the menstrual cycle. So we've invested as a football club in an app that enables the athletes to track their own menstrual cycles and to educate on how they might be able to support their own, what their own normal is and what there isn't, what their non-normals are. And there's so many other things that now we really consider. But obviously, I think it does help having female staff to be able to have some of those conversations. But I think as male staff, we can also make our athletes comfortable to be able to talk about anything, really, as long as we show that we've educated and taken the time to understand, really.
Yeah, because that kind of last question I'm going to ask is on kind of mindset, because obviously you've got a very growth mindset of trying to develop yourself. But how would you describe, again, what does mindset mean to you? How would you describe your mindset? Is it more, Are you quite open to the learning, or is it, I know this sounds a coach, we always want to learn, but is there sometimes you think, and this is kind of difficult, and I just want to maybe delegate that information to someone else, you know, again, that's another piece of mindset. How would you describe yours?
I don't know, that's a good question.
It's the best of them all.
I think obviously we recognise, I think as soon as I realise, or as soon as I think that I know everything, then I'm going to struggle.
Yeah.
And I think that that's important, because just even different types of like people that we're working with now, different age groups, different experiences, etc., there's always something that I'm learning that's different than 5 years ago when I was working with maybe somebody of the same age group now. So I think if I ever get to the point where I think I know everything, I'm going to start to struggle. And I think being open to knowing that you will make mistakes is a really important part of like how you operate. And if you can embed that sort of same knowledge, if you can embed that same sort of notion into the playing group, knowing that they can also make mistakes and that can be okay as long as there's a demonstration of learning that connects to that, then I think that's what we're all trying to sort of strive for and achieve. I think having a positive mindset is really important as much as possible, even in the toughest of times and the hardest of times, because we've got 20, well, we've got 26 in our squad at the moment, but say we've got 18 to 20 fit players and available players at training in a session. Well, I've got 18 to 20 players that are all at different points in their mindset or how they feel. And so I have to try and produce that positivity and that energy for them, just in case they're not feeling it themselves or able to generate it themselves. So I feel like, personally, I think I have to bring that to the environment, and hopefully that can then rub off onto the players, and that can make sessions a little bit more energetic. And even if their mindset isn't great that day because they've had a rough day at work, they've not had a good night's sleep, they've not been able to eat what they wanted to eat, then I have to sort of bring that to them or for them sometimes. But then if they have to do that sometimes for other people in the group, or they have to do that for us as staff sometimes in the group, then I think the players being aware that they can do that's helpful and important to it.
No, thank you again for your time, Steve.